It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It's a sham, Laura, and let me just say this. It's a friendly subpoena, and that shouldn't surprise your viewers or the American public, because this particular special counsel, Bob Mueller, has been friendly to their cause from day one. And so what I find just so disheartening is that Bob Mueller said it all. 445 pages, that's all I'm going to say. And what has he been doing? He's been courted by the other side just so that they could harass the president and keep on this narrative that honestly, there's no there. And, I just find it just unbelievable that here in Congress tonight, we find out about this on the House floor. They don't even go through normal protocol to let the minority know they broke House rules. I'm not even sure that the subpoena is valid because you can't issue the same subpoena from two different committees of jurisdiction. Listen, it is not a good day for America, but Bob Mueller better be prepared, because I can tell you he will be cross-examined for the first time, and the American people will start to see the flaws in his report.
That was Congressman Mark Meadows on Fox last night. Sandy Rios with you this morning. And, of course, he's talking about the fact that Robert Mueller, the special counsel, former FBI director, is now going to testify before the House. Gerald Nadler and Adam Schiff made a joint statement gleefully, saying he's going to report to them. That's why Congressman Meadows said it was a friendly subpoena, because, he's been working with them. He's kind of on their team, so they're happy that he's coming July the 17th. Griff Jenkins has more detail. Let's listen.
Good morning, Brian. You think it's hot where you're sitting? Wait till July 17th. This is going to be one for the history books. Mueller in the hot seat in back-to-back appearances before the House Intelligence and Judiciary Committees. President Trump reacting last night with a simple tweet. Presidential harassment, he writes. Now, Mueller agreed to appear after subpoenas from House Democrats. Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff explains.
I don't think the special counsel's office would characterize it as a friendly subpoena. He did not want to testify. He made that very clear. Nonetheless, they will respect the subpoena. He will appear.
Now, both Democrats and Republicans are looking forward to the chance to question the former special counsel. Democrats will be zeroing in on what led Mueller to his conclusion on no collusion and apparent confusion on obstruction. Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler had this to say.
Our interest is for the American people to hear it from him. There's been a campaign of misrepresentation. The president, who keeps saying the report found no collusion, no obstruction, that's not true either way.
Republicans are eager to press Mueller over the unverified Steele dossier and the anti-Trump FBI agent Peter Strzok. And lawyer Lisa Page, you see here, Republican Mark Meadows has a warning.
Bob Mueller better be prepared, because I can tell you he will be cross-examined for the first time, and the American people will start to see the flaws in his report.
Now, undoubtedly, we are going to have a lot of fireworks, but it will be interesting to watch, because remember, Mueller has said previously that if he were made to testify, he would not go beyond what he wrote in his report. Tune in and get your popcorn.
Yeah, Griff, I don't think it's funny. You know, I have a little trouble with that. I guess, listen, this is serious stuff. And my disdain for Bob Mueller's hard to hide. And sometimes it causes me not to give you, not to be as clear as I'd like to be. Let me just say that we saw Bob Mueller's persona when he presented his report, and it was not impressive. This is a man that has overseen disaster. They've been telling us before we heard him speak how marvelous, how wonderful, what a man of intelligence and character and integrity. He was an icon in Washington. And I maintain it is he had the look. He looked like a serious FBI agent, prosecutor. He had the height, the sophisticated look Washington loves, but the substance was lacking, and it goes back a very long way. And let me just tell you that, first of all, Yes, I'm sure Robert Mueller will do what he continues to do, which is act outside the bounds of his position as prosecutor, which was to say whether they will bring charges or not. That was his job in the report. It wasn't to editorialize and say, there's not enough evidence to say that the president wasn't guilty of this, so we can't declare him not guilty, which is a ridiculous standard. Any attorney, any person who has trained under our judicial system and understands certainly how the Justice Department works and how attorneys work, attorneys general and prosecutors, knows that you don't do that. Even in a criminal court, a person is either guilty or not guilty. You know, the person, the prosecution, doesn't stand up and say, well, we couldn't find enough evidence to convict, but, you know, you can't say he's not guilty. The jury, you know, the jury never says that. They declare a verdict for a reason. And so do prosecutors, but he's going to get up and wax eloquently. That'll be interesting. And Mark Meadows is correct. He's going to be asked about some tough things, and I'll just tell you a few of them. His pit bull on his team, remember, almost 100% of them are Democratic partisans, and I mean high up the chain, supporters of Hillary Clinton with their money and their mouths. And the lead one was Andrew Weissman. You've heard his name. And by the way, he's just nabbed a very big book deal by Random House. He's going to talk about his work on the Mueller team. He's, of course, not going to make personal gain out of that, right? I mean, isn't that troubling right there? Okay, but let me just tell you about his behavior. It was revealed in 2017 after Mueller invited him to be on that team to investigate President Trump that he had attended Hillary Clinton's election night party. It was also pointed out that he donated thousands of dollars to the Democratic Party, also to the Obama Victory Fund, the DNC. It also was reported, now we know this, and I have talked about it with Sidney Powell, who's now representing General Flynn, by the way. But Sidney was very involved in the Enron prosecution. Enron was something that happened maybe before some of you were paying attention to what was happening in the world. But Andrew Weissman joined the Enron task force. Enron was a huge company, is a huge company, in 2002. He became the director, where he aggressively prosecuted the account firm Arthur Andersen, which resulted in the loss of 85,000 jobs worldwide. Now, hang on, though. You say, well, maybe they deserved it, but here's the deal. The Supreme Court unanimously reversed the convictions several years later. Former DOJ prosecutor Sidney Powell said that Weissman creatively criminalized a business transaction between Merrill Lynch and Enron. Four Merrill executives went to prison for as long as a year. Weissman's team made sure they did not even get bail pending their appeals, even though the charges Weissman concocted, like those against Andersen, were literally unprecedented. His prosecution destroyed the lives and families of the Merrill employees before the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals reversed the mass of the case. Weissman quietly resigned from the Enron task force just as the judge in the Enron broadband prosecution began excoriating Weissman's team, and the press began catching on to Weissman's modus operandi. That was from Sidney Powell. So now he's signed a book deal. He's going to get rich over his work. I'm sure that Mueller will be asked about why he hired people like that that were supposed to be objective in terms of pursuing information about the president. And, of course, Alan Dershowitz says that the Democrats will regret calling Mueller. They're shooting themselves in the foot. We'll see about that. The Democrats seem to be pretty swift on their feet. But I think the Republicans mad enough and are smart enough and are all over this topic enough that he may regret what he does. Also, they might ask him about the fact that the FBI was warned early and often that Paul Manafort's file might be fake, but they used it anyway. I don't even think I've talked to you about this because so much information has come out. By the way, it's not the dossier. It's something very different. What was it called? It was called, it had a certain name, and they, Black Cash Ledger, that's what they called it. And now it looks like it was completely fake, like the dossier, and yet they used it to prosecute him and put him in jail. Not that I'm saying Manafort's innocent. I'm not saying that, but it's the same kind of thing that the Supreme Court just overturned a murder conviction against a black man who had killed four people in a furniture store. Everybody knows he did it. There were witnesses. It's not that he's innocent. It's that they said the prosecution used racist assessments to dismiss jurors. So it was prosecutorial misconduct, according to the Supreme Court. So this is the same thing, but different. And you've got Bob Mueller with egg all over his face. So he may be asked about that. Now, Jay Sekulow, by the way, has written an article and the same general thing. This is not about Bob Mueller, but it is about the whole Trump collusion affair and the Obama administration's involvement in this. And I can only, in order to be quick, I can just tell you, in fact, we'll put this piece by Jay that's published on Fox News on our Facebook page. Here's the title: Obama Administration's Anti-Trump Actions Revealed in Newly Disclosed Documents. Basically what they did, we know about this, but now it's documented. We know that they quickly reversed what were barriers to national security experts, high-level intelligence from different agencies, from being shared by lower-level employees. They rushed through, we know by their own words, just a few days before President Trump was inaugurated, this provision which allowed these agencies and these lower-level staff to share the most sensitive of intelligence publicly and with themselves. They rushed it through. Loretta Lynch signed it like 2 days before President Trump was inaugurated. We know by their own hand that they were trying to rush it through so they could use it against Donald Trump and probably, most likely, to get that dossier out in the public so that people could read it and hear, even though it was just a tabloid trash piece. And it was led by John Brennan and signed off by Barack Obama and Loretta Lynch. And so you can read Jay's article. This is so much. It's just so much corruption. It's unbelievable. I need to move to something else because immigration is such a huge deal. I think I'm going to make this really quick and go into it in more detail tomorrow. The House passed a $4.5 billion immigration package. And, of course, it's filled with all the sweetheart things they want. It's filled with stuff they want, which is going to help the immigrant children, allegedly, but nothing to really do anything about border security, nothing to help our Border Patrol, our ICE agents, Department of Homeland Security, nothing. And so the president says, you know, it's just it's a non-starter. I'm sure that the left, the Democrats, will claim, look, we passed an immigration bill, but the president wouldn't sign it. That's how this is going to be played. And by the way, this month, already another 100,000 encounters with illegal immigrants at the southern border. We are just, the pace is keeping up. We know that the Mexicans have sent, I think, 6,000 troops to their southern border, and so that has helped. But it certainly isn't stopping it, because we have to do things here to stop it, like changing the law on asylums. All right, so that's what's happening with immigration. We'll talk about it at more length tomorrow, I believe. Some quick stories I wanted to tell you about tonight is the first of two Democratic debates. There will be 5 moderators and 20 candidates. It's going to be on NBC, MSNBC, and Telemundo. So that will be taking place tonight. Should be interesting, certainly. We will be talking about it tomorrow. Stephanie Grisham, who is Melania Trump's press secretary, is now stepping into Sarah Sanders' post. So ask me how I feel about this. I don't know. I do not know Stephanie, and I don't have a personal opinion about her. Melania Trump's very high on her, introduced her. I think the red flag for me. Now, remember, I was wrong about Sarah Huckabee Sanders. So I'm telling you, I don't know. I'm just, this is mere speculation on my part. My concern is that because she's so popular in the Trump family, that she may not be conservative. You know, that is what I'm concerned about. So we'll see about that. Clint Eastwood, by the way, is ignoring Hollywood, and he's going to do a brand new movie in Georgia. I remember Hollywood's boycotting Georgia because of their abortion restrictions. So Clint Eastwood says, bah humbug, I'm going to Georgia. So he's intentionally having his movie made there. Oh, I have to tell you something else really quick. There's a retired general who fought the Taliban on horseback, now running for Senate in New Hampshire. His name is General Don Baldock. He said there's not enough leadership. The Republicans think they maybe can take a Senate seat in New Hampshire. It's, what's her name? Jean Shaheen is the current senator. So it's just an interesting story about him. Maybe I'll get him on to interview him. And also in Alabama, Secretary of State John Merrill has now thrown his hat in the race for Senate, along with Judge Moore and others. All right, so there's the top news. Stay tuned. Iran next. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
80% of the time, an abortion-minded mother who views an ultrasound or sonogram of her baby will choose life. Here's the story of Candace.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
There are currently preborn centers which do not have an ultrasound machine. Would you sponsor a machine today? Dial pound 250 and say keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Kathy Kraninger, Director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Ms. Kraninger oversees the agency responsible for consumer protection in areas such as banks, mortgages, debt collectors, and credit unions. Proverbs 14:31 reminds us of the importance of protecting others from financial harm. Whoever oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker, but whoever is kind to the needy honors God. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to lift up Kathy Kraninger as she works to ensure financial protection for Americans. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team. Help support the prayer team by signing up for our matching challenge, now through July 4th. Details available at pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. It's time to talk about the border. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really, honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's no doubt we are facing a crisis at our southern border. Tens of thousands of illegal aliens have crossed the border. The American taxpayers have been forced to feed, clothe, and house many of the illegals, not to mention provide medical care. We are a good-hearted nation, and we have gone above and beyond to provide humanitarian assistance. There is also no doubt many children have been detained, and they are living in difficult circumstances. The numbers have been overwhelming. There are only so many places to hold the new arrivals. Now, Democrats blame the president and Republicans, but that's not who's to blame here. If you want to blame somebody, blame the parents who put their children in harm's way, and blame the Democrats for encouraging migrants to cross our borders. They have, in effect, weaponized these poor children, and that's appalling. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Well, I'll tell you what the message is. When they're ready, they'll have to let us know. When they're ready, they'll let us know. Very simple.
Iran's foreign ministry says it will never be ready to negotiate now that President Trump has imposed new sanctions on the country's supreme leader and foreign minister, calling the moves a, quote, permanent closure of the path of diplomacy. But National Security Advisor John Bolton still believes the path will clear eventually.
We will simply enhance the maximum pressure campaign further. It will be, I think, the combination of sanctions and other pressure that does bring Iran to the table.
Bolton is in Jerusalem, meeting with Israeli and Russian officials, two countries with polar opposite views of how to deal with Iran. Today, Russia said it has evidence the U.S. drone was in Iranian airspace when it was shot down. The U.S. contends it was over international waters. Either way, Iran's president says it was a great thing to do and accused President Trump of suffering from a disability.
The White House is afflicted by mental retardation and does not know what to do.
President Trump called the statement ignorant and insulting and said any attack by Iran on anything American will be met with great and overwhelming force. In some areas, overwhelming will mean obliteration. Democrats on Capitol Hill continue to make the case that if President Trump ever decides to make good on that threat, that he must come to Congress first. President Trump told The Hill that, quote, "I do like keeping them abreast, but I don't have to do it legally." Now Democrats are trying to force the president's hand with an amendment that would require congressional approval for the use of military funds in Iran.
We all worry that he would bumble into a war. This morning, the Iranian president personally insulted our president. President Trump responded, threatening obliteration against Iran. Three simple words: no unauthorized wars.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell argues the amendment would hamstring the U.S. military, but he is allowing it to move forward.
I'll be opposing the Udall Amendment. We're not opposed to having the vote.
All right, so that was Kristen Fisher last night on Fox. And, of course, Iran has been in the news a lot, and rightfully so. I think we did come, we just don't know. Honestly, this is my opinion before I actually talk to the expert. Iran is erratic, and because of their economic sanction strain and the pressure by their people and the internal conflicts that they have, they are a wild card. We know that they're willing to fight, that we know they're willing to do all kinds of horrible things because they've been doing them for decades. And so, and of course, our president is a wild card too. And so we really are dealing with a serious situation. Claire Lopez knows a great deal about Iran. She's been following them for decades, and she's the Center of Security Policy. Claire also used to work for that agency whose name we cannot say. And so she joins us this morning. Claire, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Sandy. So glad to be with you again.
Let me get real basic here. When the president called off the attack a few days ago over the weekend, and he said it was because he was advised that 150 people at least would likely be killed, and he didn't think that shooting down a drone that was unmanned, even though it cost a lot of money, was equitable to actually killing people. I want to know what you thought about his decision to call off that strike.
Well, you know, Sandy, it's not so much what I think about it. It's how the actors in the region see that. And what we look at as a rational and reasonable and even humane decision, a civilized decision, to back off of a retaliatory strike because 150, by the way, we're not talking about villagers, children, women, and goat herders. We're talking about IRGC, Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, maybe Quds Force, thugs who would be in the region of wherever that missile base was that launched the missile that took down our drone. But the way that the neighborhood would see that act of backing off is weakness. It's not up to me. This is how they see it. This is how they look at it. And I look at the examples of the last how many years of Israel and the actions that it takes in response to every single provocation or threat of transfer of high-tech technology, for example, precision-guided missile technology for the missiles that Hezbollah has and is receiving from Iran by way of the Damascus regime, and how Israel responds to those threats and those attacks immediately. No wait, 24 hours, that site, whatever it is that's launched the provocation or is involved in the transfer of Israel threatening high tech, is struck. It is a limited strike, surgical strike, very precise strike. Do Iranians, do IRGC and Quds Force officials die? Yes, they do. And that hasn't been a deterrent for Israel. It does what it needs to do to keep Israelis safe. That is by contrast in the view that I'm presenting here for how the Middle East and that very tough neighborhood would look at the way that the Trump administration handled this incident.
So, I think that played probably well politically here, even though the Democrats tried to use it against the president, but people thought, well, that's reasonable, but it might not have been the best strategic move in the Middle East. Let's talk about, I always want to say Ambassador Bolton, but that's not, National Security Advisor John Bolton, who is well known to both of us. In my understanding, Claire, is that he is a hawk, I know he is, But that the president, of course, is well known not to have wanted to go into Iraq. He criticized President Bush for that way back. He's not afraid of a military intervention or fighting or ordering things like that. Not that he won't. It's just that he basically feels that Americans should not be spending their resources overseas if they don't have to, for their people and their resources. And then my understanding is that Pompeo is kind of the middle guy between the two of them. I wonder if you think that is an accurate assessment.
Well, I think that there's a false choice being presented here. I think especially pushed by the Democrats, by the Iranian propaganda machine, led, of course, directed by its intelligence services, the MOIS, or Ministry of Intelligence and Security. And that false choice is between either we don't do anything at all and just let everything go as the Iranians ratchet up the level of their aggression and belligerence, or it's full-scale warfare and it's 101st Airborne dropping into Tehran tomorrow, which is absurd. That is not the choice before us at all. The choice before us is, do we respond in a limited, tactical, precise way to attacks by the Iranian regime against, for example, international shipping, and that, of course, should be along with our allies, partners, and friends whose shipping is being attacked. Do we respond in that way, or do we do nothing, which then leaves the impression to the Khamenei regime and the neighborhood that we have blinked, that we have backed off. Now, let me just, you know, lay out another scenario here, and that is that over this whole past year, back into 2018, even before 2017, when the president, our President Trump, is backing away from the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA, pulling out of it actually last year in May of 2018, taking these steps to back away from engagement with Iran, the kind that we saw under the Obama administration, and the Khamenei regime in Tehran is trying desperately to persuade Europeans and others to stay in the deal, to keep dealing with it, to keep commerce and trade open. And what are we finding out at the same time now, we're finding out, that was going on during those months and probably still is going on? We're finding that Iran, through its Shiite Islamic terror proxy Hezbollah, was stashing tons upon tons of ammonium nitrate explosives all over the place, including Paris, including other places in Europe, preparatory to giving Hezbollah the staging preparation for massive terror attacks. This is going on at the same time that they're trying to convince us that they're just poor, aggrieved, long-suffering victims of American bullying. This doesn't compute.
No, and so, Claire, it makes you think that, okay, a couple of things. The Europeans, I know, have still continued to, I don't know to what extent, I just know that they have not really stopped their participation in the Iran deal. They've still been trading, and we've been the ones imposing harsh sanctions. And I would think that this news about the that nitrate being housed in Paris and other places in Europe would be, along with the response of President Trump over the weekend, as weak as it seems to the Iranians, I would think the Europeans would think, why, that was a very wise thing to do, because they always like to do nothing, to call off a strike because of the human cost. So my question is, do you think the Europeans will be swayed to come to our side a little more on Iran because of these two incidences?
You know, after the example of these last months, like I said, going back more than a year, I didn't even mention a number of assassination plots that were stopped during that period of time, thankfully halted before they could be carried out. Massive plot against the Iranian opposition, National Council of Resistance of Iran, annual rally planned in Paris, that was stopped. Assassination attempts against Iranian dissidents abroad in Denmark stopped. these are plots on Iranian by the Iranians on European soil. Not to mention, right here in the United States, last year, two Iranian operatives were arrested. They've since been tried and charged, tried and convicted of plotting to do pre-attack casing and surveillance of targets on American soil. These are Iranian agents. All of this is going on at the same time that Foreign Minister of Iran Javad Zarif and President Hassan Rouhani are trying to convey that they are just innocent and aggrieved victims, as I said before, of American bullying. Why aren't people paying attention to that? Will the Europeans? It seems not. It seems that the Iranians can do anything they want on European soil, and they don't seem to mind.
Well, because
I
guess
we need to.
Yeah. Well, the Europeans remind me very much of our Congress. I mean, you're right. I mean, European Union and others, they don't listen to the people and they don't care. It really is a case of the elites against the people, or certainly not looking out for their interest, with few exceptions. But Claire, I think I can answer my own question here. Iran is irrational and they're desperate now, and we can't really put anything past them. They have shown through the patterns of decades, they're willing to do extreme things, dangerous, wicked, kill, whatever. And so now we have the president imposing these sanctions, which are new, they're harsher, they're personal. They're against the Ayatollah, the foreign minister, and other military leaders. What do you think the effect of those will be? Well, this I know they're mad, they're chanting death to America, but will this, you think, cause them to bend and fold, or will it cause them to strike?
Well, first, I would say that the Iranian regime, the Khamenei regime, is really not irrational. In their paradigm, in their construct, they are not irrational at all. And I would refer people to go take a look online at the Iranian constitution, which is in English, online, and read the part how it says what the mission of this Iranian regime is. It is to fight jihad globally, to establish a global Islamic state under rule of Islamic law, and it says in the Constitution that the IRGC is an ideological army whose job is jihad. That's in their Constitution. Now, is it irrational that they follow their own Constitution? No, that's exactly what they're doing. They're following their Constitution. Now, as for the measures that have been taken and the status of the regime at the moment, so, you know, right after President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the Iran nuclear deal last May 2018, he reimposed many of the sanctions that had been listed in it or by it. Those sanctions have intensified with things like, for example, the removal of waivers that had granted waivers to certain countries to continue purchasing oil when it was cut off from others. And then you mentioned, Sandy, right, the most recent imposition of sanctions are by the Treasury Department just this week, which target specifically by name the supreme leader of Iran, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, and certain of his top IRGC commanders of the IRGC, Air Force, Navy, Land Forces, and so forth, and targets their finances. Now, as we know, the Supreme Leader himself has billions of dollars stashed away. They can't move that money anymore. They can't move it. They can't use it. They're in a very bad situation. They're in a weakened state right
now. 10 seconds.
They cannot pay their people. This is the time to support the Iranian people, who want nothing more than to be done with this regime. Not an invasion by America. Yeah. Support to the Iranian people themselves, because they want a system and a government that's representative of themselves.
Well, if you like the common sense of Claire Lopez, look for Center for Security Policy. That's Frank Gaffney's organization. All very good friends. And we're so grateful for the arguments and points and wisdom they bring to all of these important issues. Claire Lopez, thank you so much. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. According to the most recent reports provided by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, researchers looked at fertility rates for women of all age groups and ethnicities and found the nationwide rate was 16% lower than what is needed for a population to replace itself. There has been much discussion about the demographic winter in various European countries. Well, that demographic winter has reached the United States. The first command God gave mankind in Scripture was be fruitful. But man has the penchant to fancy his own ways over God's. Rejecting God's ways always carries severe consequences.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Exposing Washington reveals the deception that plagues our nation's capital.
The mainstream media refuses to tell the truth of what's really happening.
Exposing Washington brings clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C.
The American people must stay informed on what our government is doing.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman brings you the inside scoop of what's happening in our nation's capital.
We must take our country back.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
Alexa, play American Family Radio.
Welcome to the AFR Alexa skill.
Alexa, play the Today's Issues podcast from August 10th.
Do you want to play Hour 1 or 2?
Hour 1.
This is Trivia Friday.
Click Just Ask Alexa at the bottom of the Alexa FAQ page at AFR.net to get started. Then use Amazon Alexa to access the programming of American Family Radio.
Ryan Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. A lot of angry, screechy voices in our culture insist we are facing a global warming emergency. Don't believe them. Nature dropped 2 feet of snow on Colorado on the first day of summer this year, and the snowpack in the Rockies is 40 times its normal size. The recent dump of snow was caused by, wait for it, an unusually cold pool of air at high altitudes over the western U.S. One ski resort will even be open on the 4th of July. So much for catastrophic global warming. Dr. Mototaka Nakamura, a climate researcher with a doctorate from MIT, has just released a book which argues the theory of global warming is based on data which is untrustworthy, falsified, and has no scientific value. I say we stick with the climate scientists from MIT on this one.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Vice President Mike Pence will have today what could be a decisive meeting for tens of millions of Christians in Nigeria now facing the prospect of genocide and forced mass immigration. Mr. Pence's visitor is a man who should be on their side, his Nigerian counterpart Yemi Osinbajo. After all, he's one of the very few Christians in a Nigerian government otherwise dominated by Islamist Fulani tribesmen. Unfortunately, Mr. Osinbajo is instead part of the problem. He lies shamelessly, including this weekend in New York, about the anti-Christian persecution his government is at least tolerating and, at worst, enabling. Osinbajo's own tribe has sharply repudiated him for doing so. If Vice President Pence makes clear that all the persecutors in Nigeria will be held accountable and face penalties, he may be able to prevent a catastrophe there on his and President Trump's watch. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Hey, Sandy Rios back with you, and I've been telling you every day this week about the things we are learning about what's happening inside Google. And I have been trying to sort of ring the alarm for those of us that have been asleep at the wheel. And I include myself. And let me just say that Google and other social media platforms are moving rapidly. Many of them are already there full force in censoring us conservatives. And that's us. And I don't just mean censoring. I mean removing your posts so that they can't be seen on Facebook. YouTube taking down videos that they don't think you should see. And now we know that Google is actually tipping the hand of their search engine where they just swear they're an objective. It's just algorithms. And it's just according to how many people are looking at things. And now we know better. We know better because of the whistleblower that came forward to Veritas and James O'Keefe. We played the video for you on Monday. In fact, we'll put it on our Facebook, well, at least parts of it. We'll put it on our Facebook page again today because YouTube has taken it down. We know that other entities are trying to, you know, stop it. And it was interesting to me. The word is finally getting out, and some of our friends are reporting on it, like Tucker Carlson last night. And I think Tucker's in Japan, and that explains the delay to me. And I think Sean Hannity was off the air the night that this came out, too. So there are sources that I thought would cover it that didn't, but Tucker did last night. Let's listen.
All these smaller companies who don't have the same resources that we do will be charged with preventing the next Trump situation. It's like a small company cannot do that. Huh. So using a company's dominance on the internet to sway the outcome of an election, that's their plan. There should be a term for what Janai is describing. Turns out there is a term. It's a term you've heard constantly from talking heads on television for more than 2 years. It's called hacking an election. Google wants to hack our election. They're saying that out loud. As we've been told over and over again by CNN and the Washington Post and the New York Times and all the other propagandists, hacking an election is very bad. At minimum, it warrants a multi-year investigation by law enforcement agencies. And yet, it's happening now. The Washington establishment has said they want to prevent election interference. But of course, that's a lie. They just want to make sure they control the elections. That's their only goal. That's why they're not attacking the real source of election interference, which is Silicon Valley. Google, Facebook, and their ilk have far more political power than Russia ever has or ever will have. No serious person doubts that. But the people in charge of our country don't care about any of that, because when Google meddles in an election, Democrats benefit. By the way, if you want to find that video, you can't access it on YouTube. Google took it down. That's not surprising. You can already be tossed off of YouTube and Facebook if you decide they're using speech you don't like. They'll accuse you of hate speech, whatever that means. Now they can toss you off their sites just for putting up videos that make you look bad. They probably won't be banning any DNC videos anytime soon. You can be certain of that. Meanwhile, this week, Ravelry, a knitting social networking website with 8 million members, banned all explicit support for Donald Trump, and only for Donald Trump. And they got away with it. And because they have gotten away with it, other platforms almost certainly will do the same thing. All of this is going on flagrantly in public, but most Republicans haven't even responded to it. They haven't reacted at all. As soon as the 2016 election was over, the press and big tech openly began plotting on how to control the narrative in 2020, which is another way of saying control the election outcome in 2020, and using the scapegoat of fake news as an excuse to control the public discourse. Republicans were in charge of Congress at the time. They did nothing. The White House commands a vast regulatory apparatus. They've sat motionless and done nothing. The only Republican who seems even interested at all in the subject and keeping big tech in check at all is new Senator Josh Hawley. He just introduced a bill that would force tech companies to act as genuinely open platforms in order to receive valuable regulatory benefits. That's the deal. They're violating the deal. Nobody else seems to care. Passing Hawley's bill does not seem to be a conservative priority, though. No one in Congress is talking about it. That's a big mistake. Successful political parties look out for their supporters and for the public at large and protect them from harm. Republicans, meanwhile, are sitting in a stupefied fog of libertarianism, doing nothing while their ideas are suppressed and their supporters are silenced. One day they'll look up and find they have no supporters at all. Who will be to blame for that? Only themselves.
Tucker Carlson on Fox just last night. Now, here's the thing. I want to make something clear, and I think I have the last 2 days, but I want to say it again today. It is absolutely true that James O'Keefe's undercover videos and the whistleblower that talked to him said that Google intends to never let Trump be elected again. They want to affect the 2020 election. They want to change everything. They can't believe what happened in 2016. They're going to make sure it never happens again. We have it from their own lips. Okay? But that's horrible. I could spend hours on that, but that's not even where it stops. Please understand, what they are doing is controlling your mind, especially your children and your grandchildren, because they are censoring content that they don't agree with. They are making sure that your kids, when they Google something, when they search for something, Instagram's doing the same thing, by the way, that only certain things come up. And one of the illustrations that we gave you, or that James gives you on the James O'Keefe on his video is that when they Google put in a man can, it comes, a man can get pregnant. A man can have whatever periods. A man can, that's the top, they claim that's the top search. That's what everybody's looking at. That's why it comes in. It's just completely without opinion. It's just that's what people are thinking. You see, that's what they want to tell you. And then when you put in a woman can, it says, I don't know, going to be in combat. I think that's one of the things. One of the first things that comes up. Like that's really what people are thinking about. They and so I want to skip to this because it's really not quite accurate. Tucker's not quite right that Josh Hawley's the only person. Ron Johnson had an interaction, pretty good one yesterday, but Ted Cruz did the best, and I want you to hear him. He had, I think there were three or four executives from various companies, and I want you to listen to the back and forth. I want you to hear the smugness of this girl who works for Google. Let's listen.
A lot of Americans have concerns that big tech media companies, and Google in particular, are engaged in political censorship and bias. As you know, Google enjoys a special immunity from liability under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. The predicate for that immunity was that Google and other big tech media companies would be neutral public fora. Does Google consider itself a neutral public forum?
Thank you, Senator. Yes, it does.
Okay. Are you familiar with a report that was released yesterday from Veritas that included a whistleblower from within Google, that included videos from a senior executive at Google, and then included documents that are purportedly internal PowerPoint documents from Google?
Yes, I heard about that report in industry news.
Have you seen the report?
No, I have not.
So you didn't review the report to prepare for this hearing?
It's been a busy day, and I have a day job, which is digital well-being at Google. So I'm trying to make sure I keep the trains on the
track. Well, I'm sorry this hearing is impinging on your day job.
It's a great opportunity. Thank you. I really
appreciate
it.
Well, one of the things in that report, and I would recommend people interested in political bias at Google watch the entire report and judge for yourself. There's a video from a woman, Jen Janai. It's a secret video that was recorded. Jen Janai, as I understand it, is the head of, quote, responsible innovation for Google. Are you familiar with Ms. Janai?
I work in user experience, and I believe that AI group is somebody we worked with on the AI principles. But it's a big company, and I don't work directly with Jen.
Do you know her or no?
I do not know Jen.
Okay.
All right, so that's the first clip, but let's just go on, because he continues to grill her. Clip 11.
As I understand it, she is shown in the video saying, and this is a quote, Elizabeth Warren is saying that we should break up Google. And like, I love her, but she's very misguided. Like, that will not make it better. It will make it worse. Because all these smaller companies who don't have the same resources that we do will be charged with preventing the next Trump situation. It's like a small company cannot do that. Do you think it's Google's job to, quote, prevent the next Trump situation?
Thank you, Senator. I don't agree with that. No, sir.
So a different individual, a whistleblower identified simply as an insider at Google with knowledge of the algorithm, is quoted on the same report as saying, Google, quote, is bent on never letting somebody like Donald Trump come to power again. You think it's Google's job to make sure, quote, somebody like Donald Trump never comes to power again?
No, sir, I don't think that is Google's job. And we build for everyone, including every single religious belief, every single demographic, every single region, and certainly every political affiliation.
Well, I have to say that that certainly does not appear to be the case. Of the senior executives at Google, do you know of a single one who voted for Donald Trump?
Thank you, Senator. I'm a user experience director, and I work on Google Digital Wellbeing, and I can tell you we have diverse views,
question. Do you know of anyone who voted for Trump? Of the senior
executives? I definitely know of people who voted for Trump.
Of the senior executives at Google?
I don't talk politics with my workmate.
Is that a no?
Sorry, is that a no to what?
Do you know of any senior executives, even a single senior executive at the company who voted for Donald Trump?
As the digital well-being expert, I don't think this is in my purview to comment on political
affiliations. So you don't know. That's all right. You don't have to know.
I definitely don't know.
I can tell you what the public records show. The public records show that in 2016, Google employees gave to the Hillary Clinton campaign $1.315 million. That's a lot of money. Care to venture how much they gave to the Trump campaign?
I would have no idea, sir.
Well, the nice thing is it's a round number, $0.00. Not a penny, according to the public reports.
All right, that's just, you know what, we're going to put the entire interview on our Facebook page so that you can watch it, because he goes into content, too. I want to give a little background here. And by the way, the article that came out this week, the video with James O'Keefe of the Google employee who's risking so much, he talks about, he doesn't complain. He just says, I have to speak up, and I don't know what's going to happen to me. His voice is disguised. But we probably have pretty good knowledge about what's going to happen to him, because John Wacker, who was a right-leaning Google employee, wrote an open letter recently, and I think that was in June or May, describing an ideologically insular, intolerant, and retaliatory culture within the tech and information behemoth. That's Google. Writing in Medium, he said, outrage mobs and witch hunts form a concerted and targeted effort by leftist employees to get the company to freeze out or sever ties with right-leaning events and individuals. He describes the internal and external credibility crisis Google faces, and concluding that the vocal element of his colleagues are seeking to control who's permitted to work at the company as a means of ultimately controlling the broader public's access to information. And what I probably haven't even said to you, Kay Cole Janes, who is the new president of Heritage Foundation, she's a black conservative, I've known Kay for years, and by the way, the meetings that I had with Google took place at Heritage. So Kay was suggested to be on their board of directors, and it looked like she was a shoo-in. And then employees in Google had a fit, went on a campaign, and the invitation, I don't know if she, honestly, I can't recall if she was actually, I think she was going to be part of their board, and they rescinded it. And so so basically, Google, this is what's happening inside Google. And of course, John Wacker then lost his job for speaking out, but he wasn't the only one. There was another employee, and so the one that came out, honestly, one of the reasons, if there's no other reason, the fact that these employees are willing to risk so much to speak out on our behalf as Americans makes me want to do something. The fact that James O'Keefe is risking his own career, we can say that the career he does is very dangerous. He's a very gifted young man. He could be doing so many safe things, but he isn't. And the very fact that people like that are putting themselves on the front lines to try to warn us and to keep us from experiencing what China is experiencing. Google, of course, is cooperating with red communist China to develop technology to watch their people and report on them. In fact, I told you the Hong Kong protesters, and Hong Kong is still free. It's not mainland China. It's right off the mainland. The people there are still free, but the young people there and the people after these protests have been getting themselves out of social media because they're being watched and because it's being used against them. So I'm just trying to say to you, can we not do something now? And the thing that you can do is get away from Google. Go to DuckDuckGo. DuckDuckGo is the one I choose. But that's not Google. I'm also suggesting Proton Mail. I'm suggesting you share that article that's on our Facebook page and that video with everyone you know. And let's see if we cannot push back now while we still have a chance of making a difference. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.